Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Samach Hei Omid Beis. Again, 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Samach Hei Omid Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara, while looking at the text, you may have noticed a diamond marking highlighting Abaye. And along with that, you may have also noticed the long marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. On the side, in the margin, one of the special features of our Gemara markings, Shas Ozer, is the Nosei topic heading, and in this case, it's combined with a structural note we call the Mivneh. The diamond, you see, highlights Gimel Halachas 3, teachings, 3 laws, Shel Abaye, Be'inyin Ne'monis Eid Echod, regarding the believability of a single witness. In general, we've mentioned this many times in the past, Jewish law requires 2 witnesses to establish the reality, to establish the truth. What is the status of a single witness? And the 3 cases will feature Omar Loi Eid Echad, that's double underlined, where one witness comes forth and tells us information, Behemshech HaGemara Oysa Tzrichusa. In the case of continuation, Behemshech, as the Gemara continues, HaGemara Oysa Tzrichusa, the Gemara will show us the necessity of teaching each one of these halachas. Now the Gemara, Omar Abaye, Omar Lo Eid Echad. A single witness confronts a person and says, Ochalta chelev, you ate forbidden meat. Forbidden meat, specifically chelev, often translated as forbidden fats or membranes in an animal, that carries with it a very severe penalty far beyond the prohibition of eating simple unkosher meat. It carries with it the kores punishment. And if done unwittingly, the person violated it b'shogeg, as we say, he would have to bring a sin offering, a korban chatas. So a single witness tells a person, you know, you ate chelev, v'halo shosek, and the other party remains silent, ne'emon. The single witness is believed, and the defendant, he will have to bring a sin offering. Of course, we're assuming that we're dealing with it on the shogeg level. Vitana tuna. And the teaching of Abaye is supported by a Tanaic source. Omar lo eid echad ochal techelev. A single witness confronts a party and says, you mistakenly ate chelev. You might not have realized it, but what you ate was chelev. Alo omer lo ochalti. And the defendant responds and says, no, I didn't. Potter. So there's an exemption from bringing a sacrifice. Taima d'omar lo. The reason for the exemption is because the defendant contradicted the witness. He refuted the witness. Ha ishtik mehemon. And as we can infer from here, though, that had he remained silent, listening and, we'll say, accepting the testimony of the single witness, that would have obligated him to bring the sacrifice. The Omar Abaye, Omar lo eid echad, nitme'u tarosecha. A single witness says, the food that you ate, that you ordinarily guard from becoming defiled, happened to have become defiled. V'halo shosek, and the listener remained silent. V'tana tuna. And again, we have a Tanaic source that bears this out. And you'll see it's the same style as we saw just before. Eid echad omer nitmeisa. A single witness says there is defilement. V'halo omer lo nitmeisi. And the listener says, no, I did not become defiled. tahor. His status of purity remains. Taima domar lo. The reason that we don't heed the words of the witness of the single individual is because the listener, the defendant, refuted him. Hoshtik, had he remained silent, Mehemon, the single witness, the information that he brought to the fore would have been accepted. V'omar Abaye, Omar lo eid echad. And here we continue at the top of Daf Samach Vov. Shorcha nirba. Single witness says your animal was participant in bestiality. Now Rashi at the top says shorcha nirba the osir lahakrovan. As a result, it cannot be brought as a sacrifice. And we know from other places in the Torah that a shor, an animal that's involved in bestiality, is stoned, is put to death. So Rashi points out avalisoklo, but to stone it, trey boinen, you need two witnesses, and that's not the case over here. The Omar kemisas bainim kach misas hashor. The Gemara says in Bava Kama the way we would treat the owner if it came to a capital offense on his part, you would need two witnesses. So too, when it comes to executing the animal, to killing the animal, you would need to have two witnesses. In this case, though, we have one witness, and the ramifications of his information would be that the animal would be forbidden to use as a sacrifice. Vahalo shosek, and the owner keeps quiet. Ne'emon, the single witness, is believed. V'tona tuna, and we have a Tanaic source supporting this. And this source deals with korbonus, or animals that are rejected from being accepted as sacrifices. And in the, we'll say, list of disqualifying factors is vishinevda bo avera, an animal that was participant in a sinful act, like bestiality, vishahemis al pi aid echad, o al pi habailim, or the animal killed a person through either the testimony of a single witness or even on the word of the owner himself. Ne'emon, that information is accepted. Hai al pi aid echad hechidomi. In this source, there was reference to a single witness. What are the circumstances here? E deka modu bailim, if it's a case where the owner agrees and says, yes, my animal was involved with these things, then, well, hainu al pi habailim, that's already included in the source. So I don't need to repeat that which is already mentioned in the form of al pi eid echad if the owner is concurring. Elo lav deshosik, rather it must be that the bailim remained silent. And again, you see, here we have a Tanaic source, once again supporting Abaye's point. Three halachas that seem to be identical. Do I need to teach each one? Utsricha, yes, I need to teach each one. Notice we have a long marking. All of these lines of Gemara are dedicated to showing how each one of these three halachas are necessary. And as you go along in the Gemara, you might notice a numbering scheme. This parallels the numbers from before. Had we told you the first case, the case concerning the individual having been charged with eating chalev, we say it's easy for us to accept the information of the single witness. Ilav de kimle benafshe de avad. Some girsos have de ochal. If the listener himself wasn't sure that he ate the chalev, Chulin Bazara lo have a maisi. He wouldn't have brought a sacrifice that's in fact not necessary, an unnecessary sacrifice or a sacrifice that's not brought for authentic purposes is really mundane. It's sanctification. If the man didn't violate it and he's bringing a korban to atone for something he never did, that would be the tantamount to bringing chulin lazora. And chulin lazora is prohibited to bring that which is common or mundane into the temple courtyard. He wouldn't have done so. So that when he brings the sacrifice, it's evidence that he himself is aware of the offense. And And therefore, in that case, it's easy for us to accept the word of the single witness as being the truth. Avol nitmu tarosecha, a single witness that comes and says, you know, your food has become defiled. Meimar amrinan, we could explain away the silence of the owner, the listener, haidishosik, that which he remained silent, is not a function of accepting what the witness said. The sovar, he figures, chosi libi made tumaso. Even if it were defiled, when the owner himself is defiled, is so he can eat it during those days, he'll eat his defiled food. And this silence on the part of the owner is not an acceptance of the testimony of the witness, and in fact, the food might very well be completely tor. And he remains silent because there's no real gain in him to refute the witness. He's figuring, even according to what the witness is saying, the food is still, it's not a loss to me. I can eat it when I'm defiled. So, as we said, his silence is not acceptance, and in fact, the food might very well still be tohar. Ve'i ashminen ha, and had we taught you the case of the defilement and his silence as being, in fact, yes, acceptance, mishum deka mafsid le bimei tarosai. He is, in fact, losing out on the food during his tohar days, during the days that he is undefiled, and he practices this stringency of eating only that which is undefiled when he himself is undefiled. If it really was undefiled, he would have spoken up, because he is losing out by not being able to eat it during his tohar days. So that his silence, we'll have to say, is acceptance of the words of the single witness that in fact the food is defiled. Otherwise, he would have spoken up because of this element of loss to him, the Yemei Tohar, the pure days. Avol, Shoro Nirba. The case of a single witness saying, your animal was participant in bestiality. And what did we say the ramifications of that was? The ramifications of that is limited to whether or not we'll accept it as a sacrifice. It doesn't have any effect, by the way, on the kashrus of the animal in order to eat it on a personal level. The only, as we said, the only ramification is it being used as a sacrifice. So the owner, hearing a single witness saying, you know, your animal was used in bestiality, and the owner remains silent. Is that acceptance of the words of the single witness? Meimar Omar, he figures, kol ashvarim lav legabi mizbeach kaimi. All oxen are not destined to be offered on the altar. A very small percentage of animals are, we'll say, destined to be offered on the altar. So it's not this animal, it'll be another animal. I have this animal anyway for my own personal needs. And there's no need for me to speak up to counter his words. And Rashi adds, as we mentioned before, it might very well be that this animal, in fact, was not used in bestiality whatsoever. And the silence, what we have to emphasize simply is the silence of the listener is not acquiescence or acceptance of the words of the witness that it was used in bestiality. And he could still, he'll still use it as a sacrifice, even as a sacrifice. Tzricha. Therefore, we have to tell you that even in that case, when the owner remains silent, the words of the witness are binding, and the animal would be disqualified from being used as a sacrifice. Before we go on, I hope it's clear then that at each stage, by teaching just one of the halachas, teaching the previous halacha, the following halacha would not have been so obvious. But at the end of the day, we see that, in fact, remaining silent in all of these cases is, in fact, empowering the words of the single witness to be the facts or the truth or what we will go with. Before continuing in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we indicate it goes ad omid bay, so we have a rather long topic. Omar lo eid echad, a single witness comes forward and says, ishtecha zinsa, your wife was involved with illicit intimacy. For who shows sick, and the husband remains silent. Mahu shetei oser olav, does she become prohibited to him? It should be obvious, and if not, we'll say it. A married woman who has willing intimacy with another man becomes forbidden to her husband. She also, by the way, becomes forbidden to the paramour, but we're focusing right now on the husband. In the case of a woman being raped, so as long as we're dealing with a non-kohanim, the woman, the wife, does not become prohibited. So we're talking about a case of a single witness that comes forward and says your wife was a willing partner in an act of intimacy with another man. Does she become prohibited to her husband? Abaye says ne'emon, the witness is believed, and Rava says eino ne'emon. Once again, we're dealing with a case where the husband remains silent. He doesn't refute the witness. We, of course, saw in the previous section of Gemara, where the owner, the listener, remained silent, that equals the acceptance of the words of the witness as being, they will say, the truth. What about this case? Ibaya laho, ishto zinsa b'eid echad v'shosek mahu. Omar Abaye ne'emon. It's interesting, I don't know if we should make the connection to the previous discussion, but it was Abaye before who was featuring that point, that the silence of the listener gives credibility, if you will, in a manner of speaking, to that single witness. So here Abaye is seemingly consistent with what he said before, that yes, we believe the single witness. Rava Omar Eino Ne'emon. Rava says, at least in this case, he is not believed. And why do I say this case? Because this case is dealing with the realm of erva, forbidden relations, the realm of immorality, of marital status, halachos, laws regarding marriage status. And the rule is, v'ein dover sheb'erva b'chus mishnayim, matters concerning that realm of law cannot be established with less than two witnesses. Structurally now, we have a couple of words to say. As we scan ahead in the Gemara, what markings do you notice? Well, you notice a house marking. You might notice triangles. You'll also notice some long markings. I hope these things are obvious just by glancing at the daf. So what's the purpose of all of this? On the side, under the Mivneh heading, the house marking will highlight Abaye and Rava. Note, on this Omid, you see a house marking around Abaye immediately. A few lines later again, when you drop down to the very bottom of the page, you'll see a house marking around Rava. The triangle marking with the point facing up highlights Mino Aminola. From where do I know what I say? And that's of Abaye. There is a different triangle. There is an inverted triangle, which is Dechias Rava, Rava refuting, rejecting that which Abaye says. In other words, when Abaye says, how do I know what I said, that the one witness is believed, Rava says what you're bringing forward as proof is not proof. Be'omid Beis, Yofia Rava. On Omid Beis, you'll see that within the context of Rava, the triangle with a colored in tip saying Mino Amino La and Dechias Abaye. So that at the very bottom of this omen, without turning the page, without scrolling ahead, Rava appears, and at the top of Omid Beis you can see Mino Amino La. How do I know what I say, says Rava, that the single witness is not believed. And you'll see when we get to Omid Beis that it's we have a very long marking how Rava knows what he says, that the single witness is not believed. And then following that, you'll see an inverted Abaye marking. where Abaye refutes that which Rava tries to say. Now let's go into the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Mino Aminola. From where do I know that the report of the single witness and the husband remaining silent is reliable, and the husband would become forbidden to continue living with his wife? And here we have a story. Dahu Samyo, there was a blind individual. Dahu Misadim Masnaise Kamei Demor Shmuel. He knew Tanaic sources. He knew them by heart. He couldn't read them. He knew them by heart, and he would recite these Tanaic sources in the presence of Shmuel. Maybe we could say even for the benefit of Shmuel. Yumachad Nogale Velohavakosi. One day, this blind individual was delayed. Noga is he was late, and he hadn't come in the meantime. Shodar Shlicha Basrei. Shmuel sent a messenger, an agent, to hasten this individual's appearance. Adozil Shaliach Bechada Urcha. In the meantime, when the agent, when the messenger went on one path, one road, Osiyu Bechada, the blind man appeared on coming on another route. Kiyosu Shliach Omer, when the Shliach finally returned to Shmuel, he reported, Ishto Zinsa, his wife, the blind man's wife, was involved with immorality. Also the Kamei, the Mor Shmuel. And so the blind man comes to Shmuel, Amale, and Shmuel says, Imehem Loch Zil Afka. If you believe him, then divorce your wife, since you did not refute him. Fi lo, and if you don't believe him, lo topic, then you don't have to distance your wife. You don't have to divorce her. My lav, when Shmuel says, I mehem aloch, what does it mean? My lav, I mehem aloch, the lav gazlonahu, if you trust him that he's an honest person, that he's not a thief, like one would trust any individual. And I highlight the word individual. Rashi says on the upper part of the narrow lines, my lav imehem onloch hai eid kishar eid echad, like any other single witness, diadis bay, that you know sheinu mipsuli eidus, that he's not from those that are disqualified to testify. The lav gazlonu, you know that he's not a thief. So what is Abaye's point? You can see we have the long marking comes to an end over here. This is Abaye's point, that if you trust him, and obviously you're just listening, you're remaining silent, then you have to divorce her. We go with what the single witness says. And the trusting here is a function of trusting him, that he's simply a reliable individual. The Rava says no. From here you don't see that the words of a single witness per se carry the day, but rather I mehem on loch kebe tre, if you trust him as having the reliability of two witnesses, if you view him in your mind's eye as two witnesses, then zil afka, then divorce her. Vilo, if you don't view him as two witnesses, you might view him as a nice guy, a single person coming and telling you information, but you don't give him, you don't empower him with the power of two witnesses, then lo, tafka, you don't need to divorce her. So that we don't see from Shmuel's comment of I mehem aloch that a single witness, simply because he's a trustworthy guy, that is enough to establish the truth. V'yomar Abaye meno amin olo. So we try again. We have a very long Tanaic source, and contained within this is a rather dramatic story. So once again, Varma Bai Mino Amin Olah, from where do I know that one witness is believed, when the defendant, when the listener remains silent. Tesanyo Maisa Biyanai Hamelech, an incident involving King Yanai. King Yanai was a descendant from the Hashmonoim, from the Hasmonean family, a family which were Kehanim. Sheholach Lekuchlis Shebemidbar. Yanai went to this area. Kuchlis is the name of a region in the desert. Vekibe Shom Shishim Krochim, and he conquered 60 cities. Uvachazoroso, and upon his return, Hayosamea Simcha Gedoilo, he was overcome with great joy. V'korlo chol chachmi Israel, and he summoned the rabbis, the wise men of Israel, Omer lahem, and he said to them, Avoseinu hoyu oichlim meluchim bizman shohoyu asukin bevinyan beis hamikdash. Our forefathers ate meluchim. Meluchim are is a reference to vegetables. Rashi says yirokos, and they ate these meluchim at the time that they were involved with the building of the Holy Temple. Afonu nochal meluchim zechel avoseinu. Let us also eat these in honor, in memory of what our forefathers did. V'helu meluchim al shulchonu shulzah v'yochlu, and they served these meluchim on golden tables. And they ate. V'hoyosham echod ish leitz lev ra ublial. And there was a man, and without translating each expression, you would refer to him as a lowlife, a scoffer, bad-hearted individual, and the Elozer ben Pu'ira Shmo. That was his name, the Vayomer Elozer ben Pu'ira Yanai HaMelech. And this Elozer said to the king, Yanai HaMelech, Libom Shel Prushim Alecha, the hearts, the minds of the Prushim, of the Prushim is a term used to refer to the, we'll say, the rabbis. The rabbis are scheming against you. So Yanai, hearing that, says, Umayah, so how, what should I do to verify that, to know that to be the case? So he says, Hokem lohem betzitz shebein einecha. Rashi says, in the middle of the page, more or less, Hokem lohem betzitz shebein einecha, tein tzitz hakodesh al mitzchecha. The tzitz was the golden head plate worn by the high priest, by the Kohen Gadol. So he said, adorn yourself, put that on. Vayamdu al raglem lefisha shem kosovo, and they will stand up in honor of the Almighty's name that is written on this head plate. Vehem yigalu es libom, and there's a note on the side that says, limchois b'cha miyois kohen, and they will protest your serving as Kohen Gadol. Let's continue in the Gemara. Hakeim lohem betzitz, hakeim lohem betzitz shebein einov. So he put the tzitz on, the bein einov, literally between his eyes. It's an article of the Big Day Kohen Gadol. It's an article of clothing, one of the eight priests, high priestly vestments that he wears on his forehead, and he put it on, and they stood up. There was a sage amongst them, and his name was Yehuda ben Gedidia. And this Yehuda spoke up to the king and said, Yanai HaMelech, Rav Loch Keser Malchus, it's enough for you to occupy the throne of the king. Keser is the crown of the king. Hanoch Keser Kuna Zaro Shalar, leave aside the crown of the priesthood to the descendants of Aaron. Now, we pointed out a moment before that, well, he too was a descendant of Aaron. However, Shehoyu Omrim, you may, there's a possibility of a Kohen having a predecessor, a father, who was a Kohen, and that doesn't mean that the son will necessarily be acceptable, qualified to serve as a Kohen. One example would be, not related to this particular story, but one example, a Kohen who marries a Grusha, divorcee. The child is called a Cholol, and he's not categorized as a Kohen. in Yanai's case, Shahoyu Omrim, it was said, there was word on the street, Imoy Nishbeis Bemodiin, that his mother had been taken captive in Modim. Modim is the name of a place, and she, as such, once a woman is taken captive by the Gentiles, so she becomes disqualified to marry a Kohen. So you have a woman that married Yanai's father, but she was not acceptable. She was not qualified to marry a Kohen. And the son born from that kind of marriage would be disqualified from serving as a Kohen. Since she is psulikuna, he would be a cholo. V'yavukash hadover v'lo nimsa. They investigated that. Was his mother really taken captive and used in intimacy by the goyim? And they couldn't verify that. V'bodlu chachmi sro bazam. The chachmi sro that were there left while he was angry at them. Bazam means the king, Yanai, was angry with them. After all, he was told to serve as king and leave aside the high priesthood. Vayomer Elozer ben Puira Yanai Hamelech. So this wicked man Elozer says to the king, Yanai Hamelech, Hedyo Chibisrael, Kahu Dino, would a commoner amongst the Jews have to suffer such degradation, where the Chachmi Israel, first of all, they pointed out he should abandon the high priesthood, and second of all, walk out on him. That's insulting. V'ata melech, and you are a king, v'kohen gadol, and a high priest at the same time. Kachu dimcha, is this what's coming to you to be so embarrassed and not take vengeance? Umayah says, what should I do? Imata shomel atzosi, rom same. So this Elozer ben Pura says to the king, if you listen to my counsel, kill them. Rom same is to trample them, to kill them. So the king says, "V'Torah Mate Olea, what, to kill all the Torah sages? What's going to be with the Torah? Is it not going to be forgotten?" So he answers, "Harei Krucho Menachas Bekeren Zovis. The Torah, it's a scroll, it's rolled up, it's there sitting in the corner. Call Roitzel, Lilma Yavo Vilma. Anyone who wants to learn the Torah can come and learn the Torah. You don't need the sages." If we skip the brackets for a moment. Miad Vatutzet Zara Al Yedei Elozer ben Puira, he sparked the evil, and Vayagu Kochach Misrael, and he went and killed all of the king went and killed all of the sages. We're going to come back to that in a minute, but we did skip a bracketed section. Truth be told, the starred note on the side says Sugram Einom L'Shem Dilug El L'Tachim Divrei HaGemara Shenichnasu L'Toch Ha Moker. The purpose of the brackets is simply to show the length of the Gemara interruption of this Tanaic source. Nevertheless, we did skip them, the bracketed section, simply to maintain the flow of the story. In the meantime, let's go over the brackets. After Elozer, the wicked man, says to the king, you don't have to worry about the Torah being forgotten. There it is. It's rolled up in a scroll. Anyone who wants can open it up and read it. At that moment, Yanai was overcome with apikursis. Apikursis is a term referring to those who are, let's say, rebellious against God, scoffers of traditional Judaism. And what was the problem here? Da'avi Leila Meimar, he, Yanai, should have said, when Elozer ben Puira said that the Torah is rolled up and available in the scroll, anyone who wants can come and learn it, he should have answered Tenach Torah Shebiksav. That's true with regard to the written Torah. However, Torah Shebal Peh am I? What's going to be with the oral transmission of the Torah? The oral transmission of the Torah, and you have to also recall that in the time of Yana HaMelech, there weren't any written Torah books other than a Torah scroll. So that you can't even imagine someone saying, well, yeah, all the Torah is written in the good books. You can always open up a book and read it. No, it was an oral transmission. And I'm not saying that to suggest that today things are different. Not for even a second. But even if someone were to think such thoughts, I'm just saying historically, at that point, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral transmission, wasn't written at all. The writing of the oral transmission, we'll say, may have begun on a public level only at the time of Rabbi Yudah Anossi, Rabbi Judah the Prince, which was in the year approximately of 200 of the Common Era. Here we're dealing with a period of time a couple hundred years earlier, when the Torah, the oral transmission, was literally oral, and the ones who had mastery of that were the rabbis. So if you kill off the rabbis, you're going to be left with a Torah that has no that in and of itself has practically no explanation to it. The Torah says, "Thou shalt put totafos b'nei necha." The reference to what we call today mitzvah tefillin. But when you open the Torah scroll and you read totafos, what in the world does totafos mean? There's no description in how to make tefillin when you read the chumash or the mitzvah of bris milah, circumcision. The Torah doesn't say what part of the anatomy is to be circumcised. It makes reference to umaltim es orlosoi, the orla. What's the orla? What's that a reference to? And the term orla appears in different contexts. There's a orla which we know because we have an oral Torah, so we know that that's a reference to the foreskin of the male organ. But the term orla appears even in the context of the human anatomy. There's orlas levavchem. There's an orla on the heart. So are you going to say that the mitzvah bris milah is open heart surgery? Obviously, you need the oral transmission. Otherwise, those two examples and I might as well say all the other examples of the Torah as well are. Or basically, it's a closed book with regard to how to live according to the Torah if you don't have the Torah Shebaal Peh. And the Torah Shebaal Peh is we'll say, under the authority of the Chachmei Yisrael. They are the masters of Torah Shebaal Peh. Yanai in this story didn't say a word. He didn't say a word about it. He heard this claim of Elazar the wicked man, that the Torah is not to be worried about because it's in a scroll and anyone who wants to open it up can read it. But then he remained quiet. Not only that, miad we continue in the Gemara. Vatotzeitz ra al yedei Elazar ben Puira. Vatotzeitz. You can translate as the evil was sparked, or the evil sprouted forth through this Elazar, the Argu, Kol Chachmei, and all the sages. We say all means almost all the sages of Israel were murdered at that point. And the world was in a state of desolation. Ad Shibo Shimon ben Shetach, until Shimon ben Shetach, who just so happened to be Yanai HaMelech's brother-in-law, the brother of Yanai's wife. And she actually hid her brother, protecting him and actually saving him from this catastrophe. So a while later, the things calmed down, and he was enabled to depart from his hiding. And the Hichsir is Hatur Liyoshna, and he successfully restored the Torah to its original state, to its old way, to its old status. Just as an editorial comment, you see this phenomenon through the ages. It's very tragic. It's very, very sad and unfortunate and lamentable. But there, the Torah and the success of Torah learning experiences these waves in history. There are times when there are the number of Torah scholars that are around is reduced to a very small number, and then there's a resurgence, there's a rejuvenation, and then later on the same thing happens. Just to cite one very famous example of that, here you have the murder of the Chachmei Yisrael during the time of Yanai HaMelech, and a couple hundred years after that, you had Rabbi Akiva and his 24,000 students that suffered their death. And the Torah, the Gemara itself describes very similarly that the world was desolate until Rabbi Akiva joined forces with the five Torah personalities in the south, and he restored the Torah to its glory. And I dare say, even in recent times, in the catastrophe of World War II, which saw the destruction of major Torah centers, great yeshivas and great Torah sages and scholars were butchered at the hands of the wicked, evil Nazis. Yimach Shemam v'zichron, may their name be blotted out, and heavenly retribution brought upon them and all their allies. What was left after that, and then there was a great resurgence of Torah just a few short years later. A few short years in the annals of history, 40, 50, 60 years is not a very long time. Well, let us go back to our Gemara. We have the story involving Yanai HaMelech and the suspicion that his mother was unfit to have married Yanai's father as a shvuya, and the source told us that it was investigated, but it wasn't found to be, they didn't have solid proof to that effect. Heshi domi. What was the case regarding the Yanai's mother taken captive? And we said the Avukah Shadavra Velo Nimtza, it was sought out to verify the facts, and they were unable to. What actually happened? Ilema debay tre amri ishtaboi. If what happened was two witnesses said she was taken captive, ubay tre amri lo ishtaboi, and two other witnesses say that she was not. My choses de samchis ahani, what is it that you see fit to rely on those that said she was not taken captive? Because above it was said they checked it out, and it was not found that she was taken captive. So it doesn't seem that we would have been relying on the two witnesses that said she was, but rather on those that said not. So why do you rely on those that say she wasn't taken captive? Smoch ahani. Why not rely on those that say she was taken captive? And here you'd have two witnesses, and based on that you could have said that he's unfit. You wouldn't have said above the Yevukash Hadavar Volo Nimtza, that it wasn't found. And by the way, use the star that you see to the right hand side of the Mora text. You can see above where that phrase appeared in the source itself, Yevukash Hadavar Volo Nimtza. So it doesn't appear that it was a case of two against two. Ela b'eid echad. It must be that one witness had come forth and said his mother was taken captive. V'taymo deka makrishle beitre. It said above v'lo nimtza v'lo motzo, or the Lushan was v'lo nimtza, it was not found to be like that one witness said. What happened? Because two witnesses came forward and said she was not taken captive. Ho lav hochi, you wouldn't have had two witnesses come forth and refute the one witness. But the one witness would have been the only one to have shown up. Mehemon, the one witness, would have been believed. So this is what Abaye relies upon for his ruling, that one witness who says that an act of immorality took place would have been believed. Virova, notice we have the inverted triangle, that's Rava's deflection of what Abaye was claiming. Le'olam trei utrei. Really, it really was two versus two. And you'll ask, why did it say in the source that, well, hello, Motso, they didn't find her to be, in fact, a captive woman. Why are you relying on those that say she wasn't, when you could have relied on those that said she was taken captive? I'll tell you why we're not relying on those that said she was taken captive. V'chdomer of Acha bar Rav Manyumi, be'edei hazoma, as Rav Acha says in general, regarding some other circumstance, you're dealing with edei hazoma, Hachanami be'edei hazoma. So too over here with the Yanai Melech story, it was a case of edei hazoma. We asked before, why are we relying on the witnesses that said, no, she wasn't taken captive? The reason for that is because those witnesses that say she wasn't taken captive were really saying to the first witnesses, they were saying, how can you guys say that she was taken captive on such and such a day when you guys were with us in a different location at that time? And that's called Edei Hazoma. And when such a situation arises like that, we know we do not heed the words of the first witnesses. So that's why above, the source said that it was sought, it was investigated. Was his mother really a captive woman? And after her captivity, married the father? Well, they checked it out. V'lo nimsa. What actually happened was that they heard two witnesses saying that she had been taken captive, but two other witnesses said you couldn't have testified thusly because you were with us on that day in a different location. V'ivoyesema, another approach, k'derev Yitzlok, d'yom rev Yitzlok, shivcha hifnisu tachteha. Another approach to the reason that we don't establish with certainty that his mother let's say even if you say that his mother was taken captive, nevertheless there was a continuation of the story that before the Goyim had intimacy with her, she was, we'll say, re-kidnapped by the Jewish community, and so as to keep the Goyim off balance, they replaced her, i.e. they replaced Yanai's mother before Yanai's mother was used in immorality. They replaced her with a heathen bondmaid. So the Goyim that took originally Yanai's mother in captivity, they didn't realize that she was not there anymore. They had a replacement female, this heathen bondmaid, and therefore there's no hard evidence to say that Yanai's mother was really a participant in intimacy with Gentiles, an act that would have rendered her unfit to the kahuna. Omar Rava. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Mino Amino La. From where do I know my point? Namely, that one witness is not believed in a Dover Sheba Erva in matters of marital status, of immorality.
one witness is not believed even when he is not refuted, Disnan. You notice that we have an extremely long marking here. Long marking takes up, most of it is taken up by a long Tanaic source, as you can see in the frame. And in this discussion, in this framed section, you'll see a back and forth discussion between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, Chipus Moker Ledivrei Rava Di'ed Echad Eino Namon B'Davar Erva. You might notice that in the margin we've written under our Nosei heading, Chipus Mokor LeDivrei Rava Di'ed Echad Eino Namon B'Dvar Erva. So the source begins, Disnan, Omar Rabbi Shimon, Maisa B'Megura Shel Diskim B'Yavne. There was an incident. Megura is a pool of water. Diskim is the name of a place. Now, let's point out that this pool of water was used as a mikveh, was used as a rituarium, a pool in which immersion through the defiled, those who are defiled will, upon their arising from the immersion, achieve purification. So a rituarium, a mikveh, requires a minimum amount of water, 40 se'ah. That's the name of, it's an amount, se'ah is a measure, 40 se'ah. Less than that will not be effective. So there was an incident in this particular pool of water in Yavne. Yavne is the name of a place. Rashi points out that Shel Diskim, we mentioned, was maybe erroneously named a place, but there are two pshatim in Rashi. One is that it's the name of a man in Yavne, or alternatively, it's the name of a place, like we said, in Yavne. Shahoysa Oimedes Becheska Shlema, it was assumed to be complete in terms of the necessary quantity of water. Umadadu Venimsis Chasera. And on a particular occasion, they measured it, and it turned out to be lacking. Kol taros shenasu al gaba, all matters of purification that were done through it, that were immersed there, hoy Rabbi Tarfon metayer, Rabbi Tarfon declared as having been successfully purified, and Rabbi Akiva metamen, Rabbi Akiva declared the taros that were processed there, that were immersed there, those entities that needed purification through immersion, Rabbi Akiva said, never achieved their purification, and he declared them defiled. As the source goes on, we'll have a discussion between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon on the matter. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, mikveh zeh b'cheska sholem hu omeid. The mikveh, this pool, had the status of being complete. Misafek ato bo lechasro, because of a doubt. The doubt being when did it become lacking? So up till the measuring, it was assumed it had a status of being complete, and because of a doubt, you're going to declare it incomplete or lacking. That's misafek atabal chasro atechasrenu misafek. Don't declare it lacking from a standpoint of doubt. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Adam zeh becheskas tomei hu omeid, the defiled individual who needed to immerse in the pool. Before he went into the pool, he had the status of being tomei. Misafek atabal letaro, in the face of a doubt whether the pool was complete or not, you want to declare this man tohor as being purified. Don't declare him tohor from a standpoint of doubt. So you have Rabbi Tarfon focusing on the pool as having enjoyed a status of complete. Rabbi Akiva focuses on the client, the item that needed the effects of the pool, but it, the item, the person, had the status of being Tomei. Amar Rabbi Tarfon. We use a triangle here to highlight the word Moshel, and on the side of the Gemara under the Mivneh heading, Havlotus Moshel, Shenoisim Rabbi Tarfon for Rabbi Akiva. Each one gives an analogy to their respective points of view. So, Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Moshel, Le'oimed Umakriv Al-Gabi HaMizbeach. A Kohen who was serving, offering sacrifices in the Holy Temple, in the Beis HaMikdash, on the altar, Venoda, and it became known, Shu Ben Grusha, O Ben Chalutza, that he is the son of a forbidden Kohen marriage. If he in fact was the son of a divorcee, though his father was a Kohen, but the Kohen married a divorcee, or a woman who participated in Chalitza, the shoe removal ceremony involved with freeing a Yevama, the resultant child is a Cholol. So there is a So imagine a Kohen who was serving in the Beis HaMikdash, and then it became known that he is a Cholol. Whatever he had been offering till that point is acceptable. Whatever he did till that point was successfully offered sacrifices. Omar Rabbi Akiva, I guess it's obvious, but from that point on, that it's known that he's a cholol, that he's the son of a kohen who married a grusho or a chalutza. Obviously, from that point on, he cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But up till that point, even though he was born as being really disqualified, but it wasn't known. He had the status of being acceptable. So everything till that point is a kosher, is acceptable. Omar Rabbi Akiva, Moshol, Li'oimeidu Makriv Agabi HaMizbeach. Very similar situation. A Kohen who was serving on the altar, Venoda Shuhu Balmum, and it became known that he was a blemished individual. Shavodosa Psula, everything that he had offered till that point is unfit, is disqualified. So you can see Rabbi Akiva argues, giving an analogy to his point of view that everything up till this point, when you find no doubt, when it becomes known that he is in fact blemished, so everything up till that point is no good. Similar to the case of the mikveh that was found to be choser, lacking. So everything up till that point does not become purified. Omar Rabbi Tarfon. You compare the mikveh case to the case of the blemished kohen, and I compared it to the case of the ben grusha ben chalutza. Nire lemi doma. Let's go see to which the analogy is a tighter fit, is more similar. I doima leben grusho ben chalutza. If it's similar to the case of ben grusho ben chalutza, like I said, says Rabbi Tarfon, then nidonenu ke ben grusho ben chalutza. Then we'll judge the mikveh the same way and declare everything up till that point is being purified. I doima lebal mum. If the mikveh is similar to the case of the balmum, nidonenu ke balmum, then we'll judge it like the balmum, and everything immersed till that point will be declared as being still defiled. Hischil Rabbi Akiva Lodun. So Rabbi Akiva started the analysis. Mikveh psulo biyachid, ubamum psulo biyachid. Rashi says in the upper part of the narrow lines, Mikveh psulo biyachid, bo echad viomer ani modadativ. I measured the pool, v'nimtza chaser ne'emon. He is believed, the Kaimelon Eid Echo Nemon Bisurin, that a single witness is believed in matters of, let's say, ritual law. Isurim, that which is forbidden, that versus that which is not forbidden. For example, if a person comes forward and says, this piece of meat is kosher, you can, on his word, you can eat the piece of meat. Eid Echo Nemon Bisurin. So if one person comes forward and says, the mikveh is puzzle, he is believed. And so a mikveh can be rendered unfit, can be rendered disqualified by the word of a single individual. A balmum is psulo biyachid. Rashi says, "Ba'amum psul biyachid bo echad v'yomar ba'amum hu." Ne'amon. If someone comes forward and says, he is a blemished individual, so he's believed. V'al yochiach ben grusha ben chalutza shepsul b'shnayim. You cannot allow the precedent of ben grusha ben chalutza, or the example of ben grusha ben chalutza, to prove the case of the mikveh. Why not? Because in order to establish someone as being a ben grusha ben chalutza, you would have to have two witnesses that could testify that the Kohen married a woman who was divorced. Dover acher, mikveh psula begufo, another approach in terms of the analysis. The mikveh is an inherent deficiency. The mikveh itself is lacking the necessary amount of water. Balmum psula begufo, a blemish is a deficiency in the body of this very Kohen, the Kohen that's serving on the altar. So Balmum is also a psula begufo. So you see a closer relationship between mikveh and Balmum. V'al yochiach ben grusha ben chalutza shepsula me'achirim, the ben grusha ben chalutza, his deficiency is because of his mother having married a father. It's not something that's generated from within the Kohen himself, or within this individual himself. Omar le Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon, upon hearing Rabbi Akiva's analysis, was very impressed. And he said, Akiva, kol ha-porish mimcha, k'porish min ha-chayim. He who separates himself from you is like someone separating himself from life itself. Hi, balmum shepsulo biyochid heichidomi. Rabbi Akiva mentioned that the balmum, his status is established by the word of an individual. Heichidomi, I dekomakrish le mi mehemon. If the Kohen would refute him, would the witness be believed? No. Ela deshasik, the Kohen's remaining silent. Now, we mentioned in the same breath, the analysis of the contrast between the case of Balmum versus Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Udekavosegabi Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza deshasik. And then the parallel to the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, also, when it's said concerning the individual that he is a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, the listener, the defendant, is quiet. Fikotoni. And it's said above. We use the little marks to the side of the more text, and you can align them with the similar mark above, and you'll see where this quote is coming from. You just search for the star above, and you see it said above, Mikveh psulo biyochid, ubalmum psulo biyochid, v'al yochiach ben grusha ben chalutza shepsulo b'shnayim. Now notice we've dashed underline this. The case of ben grusha ben chalutza involves forbidden marriages. So we call that the realm of erva. And it says that in the source, that the realm of erva can be established only with two. One would not be believed. That is the end of, we'll say, Rava's point, where Rava addressed the issue, Mino Amino Law, at the very top of the page. From where do I know that one witness is not believed in Dovashim Erva, even when the defendant or the listener remains silent? One is not believed. Ve'abaye, Omar, Abaye rejects this source. This source is a basis for Rava, that is. Li'oilom de komakish le. The case involves the Kohen, the defendant, challenging the single witness. Udeko amris amai mehemon. And you'll ask then, why is the single witness believed when he says you are a balmum, you are blemished? The reason the single witness is believed, even though you have a Kohen screaming, challenging him, because the Omar Le, the witness, can say, Shlach Achvi, strip yourself of clothing, and let's have a look. Is there a blemish there or not? V'hainu dekotoni, mikveh psula begufo, ubalmum psula begufo. The mikveh has an inherent problem, and the balmum has an inherent problem. Both of them are problems that can be verified, that can be proven. V'al yochich ben grush mechlusa shepsula me'achirim. And therefore you can't use the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza case or precedent to prove the case of mikveh where there is that difference that the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is a deficiency from an outside cause, not something inherent. The point of this last citation is to show what Abaye was saying regarding the case above of the yachid and the response of the listener. In other words, the balmum charge and the listener's response. So that you cannot learn the source above the way Rava did, in the sense of the balmum, in the sense of it, in the sense of it being a case of silence. So that it's in the case of the single individual, in the case of the Balmum, the reason that the A was believed is because he has the, we'll say, the upper hand, in that he can say Shlach Achvi, and thereby, even if the Kohen is challenging him, is refuting him, we still go along with the Eid Echad. Before we go on in the Gemara, we glance at the side under our Nosei / Mivne heading. You see a diamond and the word Minolon, that's the highlighted word. From where do we know, number one, Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, Avodoso Kshera? A point that was mentioned earlier, that upon discovery of a Kohen really being a non-Kohen, by virtue of the fact that he's a Cholo, as a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, all the Kohen services, all the sacrificial offerings that he actually had done up till the point of discovery are acceptable. From where do we know that? Number two, Balmum Avodas Upsula. And also mentioned earlier, the Balmum, who is discovered to be that, all the sacrifices that he had offered are disqualified. The Gemara. Uben Grusha, and well, by the way, notice, of course, the squiggled arrow to the left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see this is a reference to what was mentioned earlier. You find the corresponding arrow above. So that Ben Grusha Mechalutza, Davozaso, Ksheira, Menalon, from where do we know that? You'll notice we have some names underlined and numbered 1 through 3. Different approaches to how to answer this question. Omar of Yehuda Mar Shmuel, the Omar Kra. The Pasuk says, and before we actually go on in the Gemara text, let's just glance at the side where we have a citation of verses from Bamidbar, Perek Chof Hei. First, we have Pasuk Yud Beis, and the Pasuk quoted by the Gemara is Pasuk Yud Gimel. So let's read the Pasukim. It says in Pasuk Yud Beis, Lochein Emor, Hineni Noisein Es, Noisein Loi Es Brisi Shaloim. The Pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Pinchas says, I am granting unto him my covenant of peace. Voisoloi Ulazaro Yachrov Bris Kahunas Oilom. Tachas Asher Kine, etc. Now the Gemara. From where do we know that a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza sacrificial service is acceptable up till the point of discovery? The Pasuk says, V'hoysaloy ulzar achrov, bein zera kosher, uvein zera posel. Whether it's acceptable offspring, or descendants, or even posel disqualified. Their service is recognized as being acceptable. Again, I emphasize, only till the point that he's discovered. Rashi says, Voiseloy Zaro Achrov Choy, Bain Zer Apostle, Cholol, a Zer Apostle disqualified descendants is a reference to the Cholol. Lulachatchila Lo Komar, the Hom Cholol, Karyo Rachmona, Shnisham Yushus Kayin. We're not saying here that he's acceptable as a first choice, but rather post facto. The next source, Avur de Shmuel. Maybe I should just emphasize that the pasuk that we read, "Vayisalo ulizaro," we compare whether it's Zera Kosher or Zera Apostle. They represent the covenant of the priesthood, which means their sacrifices are accepted. And Avod Shmuel Omar Mehocha, a pasuk from the end of Sefer Dvarim, "Borei Hashem Cheloi Ufoyal Yodav Tirtzeh." It should be noted that this verse is coming from the bracha to the tribe of Levi, from whom come forth the Kohanim. So the pasuk that said, Borei Hashem Cheloi, we dashed underlined the word Chelo, because we're darshaning that, Afilu Chulin Shebo Tirtzeh, even the mundane, or the disqualified, the profaned ones, Tirtzeh. You accept the sacrifices offered by those that were disqualified by virtue of Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza. Rabbi Yanai Omar, Mehocha. The Pasuk says, Rabbi Yanai says, from here we see that the avoid of a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is acceptable. It says, Uvosa el Akein Asher Yeh Bayomi Mohem. It says, and you shall come before the Kohen that will be in those days. The pasuk seems to be saying something that's either, you can call it redundant or obvious. The pasuk says, and you'll go before the Kohen that'll be in your days. Does it occur to anyone that someone would go to a Kohen in a time machine, in a Kohen that's not in their days? So, Ella, what does it mean, the Kohen asher yeh b'yamim ahem? Elo ze kohen v'nischalel. That's a reference to a kohen. Elo ze kosher v'nischalel. That's the reference to a kohen that had been kosher, but then subsequently it was discovered that he was a cholol. So up till that point, though, he is recognized as a kohen whose services will have been accepted. The next point, we also have a triple star marking. You can see where this comes from above. Baal mum davodasu psula minolon. From where do we know that the services, the sacrificial services done by a blemished kohen, upon discovery of his having been blemished, the sacrifices that he had offered are unacceptable? Minolon. From where do we know that? Omar of Yudah Mar Shmuel, Diomar Kro. The pasuk says, this pasuk, by the way, in Bamidbar Perek Chofei, is pasuk Yudbeis, and we had read this pasuk earlier. This pasuk precedes the pasuk Yudgimel, which we cited before in the context of the Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So here we're reading from the previous pasuk Yudbeis. It says, Lochein emor hineni noisein loy es brisi shalom. And the word shalom is kishu shalom, the covenant of the priesthood of the kahuna is shalem, when he is complete, unblemished. Velok shu choser, not when he is lacking. The Gemara asks, but it doesn't say shalem, v'ha shalom ksiv. The word appears as shin lamed vav mem, shalom, not shalem. Omar Rav Nachman, vav de shalom, the vav in the word shalom, ketia he, according to the oral a tradition in how to write a Sefer Torah, the word, the vav in that word is actually has a split in it, so that it's not viewed as a regular vav, so we have the right to interpret it as shalem, only when he is complete and not blemished. The Mishnah that we see here is a Mishnah that has major rules in it regarding pedigree, purity, purity of genealogy. On the side under the Nosei / Mivneh heading, we have a double underline which highlights the expression Kol Mokom or similar expressions V'chol Mi, Klolim Bedine Yuchsin, rules concerning pedigree. We'll be highlighting with a dashed underline the word Havlad, the child that results from different kinds of unions, and also a squiggle underline highlighting the expression Ezozo. So our plan for today's shiur is to read the Mishnah, and Mirz Hashem, the next shiur will pick up from the very beginning of the Gemara, the second line from the bottom, which will then clarify the rules that are taught in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Kol Mokom Sheish Kiddushin Vein Avera, any union of man and woman where there is Kiddushin, where the marital bond is formed, and there's no sin involved, Havlad Hoylech Achar HaZochar, the identity of the child is based on the father. And what are we interested in identifying? We'd be interested in identifying, is he a Kohen, is he a Levi, is he Israel? V'ezezu, what is referred to in the Mishnah, what is referred to by this rule? And I want to emphasize now, but we'll Mirz Hashem get to it in our next year. When you see an expression, Ezezu, there's a certain exclusionary tone to this expression. In other words, the following is what we mean by the rule. There are other examples that would be excluded. So, V'ezezu, Zu, Kehenes Levi of Israelis, examples of a marital bond that's formed and there's no sin would be a case of a female from a Kohen family, a Levi family, Israel family, Shenosu L'Kohen Levi Israel, that married male counterparts. And it don't make the mistake that it means a Kohenes Dafka marries, specifically marries a Kohen, but a Kohenes marries any one of these, a Kohen Levi Israel. Likewise, the Levia, the female from the Levi, marries one of these, Kohen Levi Israel. All of these are examples of a marital bond taking hold, and there's no sin. There's no sin for a Kohenes to marry a Israel. Number two, V'chol Mokon Shiesh Kiddushin V'yesh Avera, any situation where a marital bond is formed, i.e., the woman is considered a married woman, however, there's an element of sin in that union, Havlad Holech Achar HaPogum, the identity of the offspring will be based on the more, the more seriously disqualified member of the couple. Which is the mother or father? Which one is more Pogum, the Ezezu, and what is referred to by this rule, where there is a marital bond, but there is a deficiency, there is a disqualifying factor. Zu almona l'kain gadol, grusha v'chutzu l'kain hedyot. A widow is not allowed to marry a Kohen Gadol, but if she does, a marital bond is formed, but it's in sin, because, as we said, a Kohen Gadol is prohibited in marrying a widow. A standard Kohen is prohibited in marrying a divorcee or a chalutza, and yet, if they marry, there is a marital bond that's formed. Mamzeres is Israel, a mamzeres or a nesina, an illegitimate girl or a girl coming from the Nesinim people that marries a regular Jewish fellow, a marital bond is formed, but it's in sin. Bas Yisrael lemamzer lenosin, or the other way around, gender-wise, a female Jewess marrying a mamzer or a nosin. Those are examples of there is a marital bond, there's condition, but there's an element of sin. A Bas Yisrael, for example, should not marry a mamzer. Number three, v'chol mi she'ein lo olav kiddushin, aval yesh lo al achirim kiddushin. Any example where this specific couple does not form a marital bond, but the members of the couple, the woman could have married someone else, and a marital bond would have been formed. So with regard to this couple, where as the Mishnah says, there's no marital bond that's formed, the child that results is Havlad Mamzer. That is the, we'll say, the recipe for an illegitimate child. What's an example of that? Anyone who marries a forbidden relative that carries with it a kores punishment. A quick example, a brother marries his sister. So there's no marital bond. We don't call that sister a married woman. That the child that results from brother-sister marriage is a mamzer. That sister, that woman who's the man's sister, she could marry someone else, and it would be a regular binding marriage. That's what we mean when we say there's kedushin with acherim, with others. So when the brother-sister marry, that produces mamzerus. The chomi, number four, the chomi she'ein law, lo alav velo al acherim kedushin. Any situation where the woman marrying a man does not form a marital bond with the man, nor with any other Jew, the havlad kamosa, the child's identity will follow the mother. V'yezeh zeh, what is an example of that? Zeh vlad shivcha v'nochris. That's the child of a bondmaid, a heathen bondmaid, or a Gentile woman. So a heathen bondmaid or a Gentile woman, say, mates with a particular Jewish man. There's no marital bond between them, nor is there a marital bond formed between a Gentile woman and any other Jewish man. Hence, the child's identity will be that of the mother, the Gentile, and the child will thereby be a Gentile. Mitzvah Shem, in our next shiur, we're going to then analyze these rules. Are these rules, in fact, accurate? Are there exceptions? What do the expressions in the Mishnah refer to? And says, kol mokom, the word kol is an inclusive expression, the ezo zeh is an exclusive expression. This will be the preoccupation of the upcoming sugya. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.